last year, my New Year's resolution was to not finish more books.
Why?
Because
start more, finish less, man.
Like, if it's not, if you're not feeling it, just move on.
I get what you're saying.
Not every book is for every person, yeah. Right?
April and I have had serious conversations about the value of quitting.
Oh, yeah. I don't, it's not in my DNA. I will bang my head up against that wall until I'm bloody. I do not quit.
Life's too short. Don't read books you're not interested in all the way.
There's opportunity. Fair. There's opportunity cost, you know, that you got to reclaim.
Well, Happy New Year to everyone.
Yes, Happy New Year. It's not the new year while we're recording this, but it will be when you hear it.
Happy 2025. But we are so glad to be back with everybody for our new legislative session, which is the topic of today's episode, and for a new year and everything. So we are very excited to have our colleague Sean Gatewood joining us today. Sean, you joined us on a previous episode in our first season, I think.
Yeah, it's been a little while. Glad to be back.
Do you want to tell the people who you are?
Well, my name's Sean Gatewood. I do some of the grassroots work as well as statehouse advocacy for the Alliance for a Healthy Kansas. And then I have some other clients that I do mostly in sort of public safety and the health space in sort of the same roles.
Very good. And we rely on you for all of the intel about what's happening at the state house, which can change daily.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Sometimes by the hour.
Yeah. So we are excited to talk to you. We did a couple months ago, right after the election, we did an episode on kind of the basics of what happened in the November elections and the makeup of the legislature. But we are here now because we have more information to share. And Sean is going to help us do that. So, Sean, do you want to talk to us a little bit about the new makeup of the Kansas legislature?
Sure. So I think everybody by this point kind of understands that Republicans won quite a few seats in some hotly contested races. And so that kind of trickles itself down into, you know, into the committee roles. Committees are all done on a partisan basis, so they're proportional to the partisan makeup of the full body. So, you know, if there's 3 Republicans to 2 Democrats on the, you know, in the body, then there's 3 Republicans to 2 Democrats in each committee. Mm-hmm. And so that math kind of trickles itself down. And so now we're seeing more Republicans on all the committees in both chambers. And so that's kind of come on through, and then there was leadership elections. So the makeup on the House side was pretty stable, but leadership on the Senate side, Senate president stayed the same, but the vice president and the majority leader, those both changed over. And those are the folks that are heavily involved in making all of the appointments. On the Democratic side, the Senate leader stayed the same, but the House has a new leader, and that's Brandon Woodard from Lenexa, and so he is the one that makes all the Democratic appointments.
Tell us more about what appointments means.
So you're, as a legislator, you make requests to what committees you want to be on, and that can be based on what's important in your district, it can be your area of expertise, whatever, and then your leadership will make the determination of what committees you're going to be seated on. So if you are somebody that has a farming background and you're from Western Kansas, you're pretty sure to be placed on something agricultural or water related, whether that be a budget or a policy committee or whatever. You've got an area of expertise and they're going to put you in that. And we see that in the health committees. There's one of the new legislators is a dentist. One of the new legislators is an occupational therapist. And then they kind of get placed on those committees.
Those leaders are basically assigned which committee you're going to get.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So, and it could be the leader themselves, or a lot of times they do it sort of by committee. The other folks that are elected to, say, Senate president and the majority leader and the vice president, and they all kind of get together, and then they make those determinations as the leadership team.
How many committees does your average legislator sit on?
On the House side, it's generally 3. The senators typically have a few more, and that doesn't count the subcommittee. So most senators will have like 4 committee assignments, and then they'll get sometimes subcommittees out from there.
Mm-hmm. What's the criteria for picking a leader of a committee? Is that just kind of seniority or expertise?
Can be seniority, can be expertise. At the end of the day, it's those leadership folks that were elected by their caucuses. Republicans elect theirs, Democrats elect theirs, Senate President, Speaker of the House, that are going to make those determinations of who's going to be the chairs of each committee.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's a nice way of saying that sometimes it's based on politics and not necessarily on the criteria that you mentioned about seniority or expertise.
So this is something that I'm not sure that I think people know, but we don't think about it a lot, is we elect our representatives and our senators in the legislature, but then they go on to elect leadership. And the leadership is a big deal because they get to pick what does and does not come up for discussion. Probably some other things that I don't know.
Well, I mean, they get to pick who those committee leaders are. Mm-hmm. And so that's basically how they control what comes up in committees. Because if you are a committee chair and you're not doing what leadership has asked you to do, you won't be the committee chair for very long.
Yeah, they all serve at the pleasure. So they make the committee assignments, and then they decide who leads the committee, and then they decide what bills go to that committee.
It's a lot of power.
It is a tremendous amount of
power. It's all the power, almost.
And, and then there's even some stuff beyond that of sort of setting budgets or whatever else that really can come down to those elected leaders. And that's all done through secret ballot. They meet... they've already met earlier in December, and so each caucus kind of goes into their own thing, and they'll nominate and debate and then finally vote on whoever is going to be their leaders. And that's all, you know, kind of a secret ballot thing. They literally write it up. I'm a former member of that Kansas House myself, and you know, you just sort of write it on a piece of paper. They have people from research and the revisor's office come in and count the votes for them. And yeah,
is that the only thing done by secret ballot?
Well, once you go into the legislative session, then that's all open mm-hmm. votes.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's the same way in the federal elections too. I mean, that was kind of a big thing, you know, electing the new Speaker of the House, you know, in Congress, and who was going to be the new, you know, leaders and whatever else.
Yeah.
It's all secret ballot.
And they had to do that like 13 times or something.
Yeah.
A lot of
yeah.
times.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they came earlier in December and did that. And so what do they do between then and the first day of the session?
Well, so that's kind of the news we've been getting. This is the first year of the biennium, and in this particular one, the entire legislature was, you know, newly elected, right? Because mm-hmm. The Senate ran at the same time as the House, so everybody just went through a new election. So then 2 years from now, the Senate won't be doing this, but that's another piece of power. They determine which committees exist. Right. So there's a few committees that, you know, they're appropriations and things like that. Right. Ways and means. Those are going to be around forever and for always. But there's committees that come up. They might be for a particular goal or that. For instance, this year, the Senate created the Committee on Government Efficiency that's going to be chaired by Senator Renee Erickson from Wichita. And that didn't exist before. So. That's going to be a new one that hadn't existed previously.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting and also a little bit unnerving because you don't know what efficiency necessarily means to others. Like, I know what it means to me and I can look it up in the dictionary, but it might have a totally different meaning for the people who are creating that mm-hmm. committee. So, well, I guess we'll see what happens, but...
Yeah, you never know what's going to come out of those committees. I mean, when I was first elected to the, this is going to date me to some degree, but when I was first elected, I was put on the Vision 2020 committee that was a brand new committee that was brought about, you know, to see the world in the year 2020.
Did you pick for a pandemic?
Yeah. I did not.
That vision.
We didn't see that coming.
You
we never did. Yeah.
You could have saved us.
Yeah. So that, I mean, and that committee back then, it didn't really turn out a bunch of bills or anything. It mm-hmm. talked about stuff, but it was supposed to be this sort of seeing the future kind of thing. I don't know how successful it was in doing that. And I want to say they kept that committee around for like 4 years. Mm-hmm. and then it dissolved. So
okay,
they come and they go to some degree, some of those things.
So that's what they're doing, like during the interim between after the election and they choose all of their leadership and things, they figure out those committees and they get a schedule, and that's kind of the administrative time.
Yeah.
I mean, they're also getting their offices, and you cannot put enough emphasis on how important it is where your office is located for legislators. Yeah. So there's, you know, kind of a seniority order, or, you know, being on the right side of those leadership elections can determine how well placed your office is, and, you know, a lot of things like that. So
this
that's
is a
happening
sensitive
too
topic for me right here. I'm just going to tell you right now, this is a sore spot, because I never got, you know, in my 4 years of being in the Kansas House, I was always officed in the docking building.
Oh.
So I had to walk through that tunnel and whatever for 4 years.
That was during construction.
It was
right?
during the construction. You know, well, they didn't just put me in a closet because I was who I am or whatever, but. Yeah, I never got an office in the Kansas Capitol.
That tunnel is scary.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
it, like flickering.
Oh, I loved it. I, you know what? For being claustrophobic, there's something comforting about that tunnel.
No.
Even though it leaks and there's sometimes water in it, it just feels like it's been there for 120 years and it'll be there forever.
It does feel like that 100%. I got to say that. There were days of, you know, 20 mile an hour winds and you're 10 degrees below zero. And I was like, I think I'll walk outside.
I didn't think you were going there. Okay.
So, okay. So that's kind of like the big overview of what's going on. Can we dial in a little bit and talk about committees that people who are health policy advocates might be interested in?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm missing a little bit of information. We don't yet have the Democratic Senators Committee assignments yet, but we do have the Republicans on the Senate side. The other thing that's a little bit different, you know, Senate side, is that, you know, you have the Ways and Means Committee. And then it has subcommittees that handle things like the social services budget. Where on the House side, that's a standing committee. It's essentially a subcommittee, but not all the members are from the Appropriations Committee. You're assigned it, you know, by leadership at the beginning of the year, just like every other committee. Where on the Senate side, the Ways and Means, they assign it from the committee as a true subcommittee. Mm-hmm. And so we don't have those assignments yet for Republicans or Democrats. So the committees that we have House Social Services Budget, which handles all of the, obviously, the social service budget things.
Brilliantly named.
All of the child need of care, like foster care stuff, the Medicaid program, all of those sort of issues go through there as far as the finance, the budget side of things. Mm. And then you have House Health, which is more of the policy side. So they're going to do, you know, we've had our Medicaid expansion hearings there. They also hear a lot about territorial disputes, if you will, of various practitioners, what's allowed, what's not, that sort of thing. On the Senate side, you have the Senate Public Health and Welfare Committee, very similar. You know, and then there's issues that come into those committees that, you know, they're more on the fringes. They're not necessarily what you're thinking about, you know, doctors, hospitals, dentistry, finding people needing care, that kind of thing. Sometimes you'll see things like cosmetology issues or whatever else. It's not data, you know, it just kind of depends. So in those, we have, you know, we know quite a bit about at least who's going to be on them, where they're at. So we can start, you know, if you want, with Social Services Budget Committee.
Who's the personnel? Give us the tea, Sean.
Yeah, so the person in charge of the Social Services Budget Committee, his name is David Bueller. He is retired from the Navy. He's going to be new to that role. He hadn't been on the committee before. So this came about tragically, to be honest. Chair Les Mason passed away.
That's right.
Last year. And he had been, you know, a very good chairman. He genuinely cared, listened to the issues, and I think did a pretty fantastic job. And he passed away. So now we had to have a new chair that left a pretty big void. And so Representative Bueller coming in from Lansing. Will Carpenter's the vice chair on that from Butler County. Chairman Carpenter has kind of moved around his chairmanships. He used to chair the Social Services Budget Committee. This year he's going to chair the House Health Committee, and he's going to be vice chair on the Social Services Budget Committee. And it's because, his, you know, the former chairmanship, the guy knows what's going on. Mm-hmm. He understands the sort of financial issues of all the, you know, social service budget items. And, you know, now he's chairing the Health Committee, so you're going to have some carryover knowledge with him. So the interesting thing to me on the House Social Services Budget Committee is the four remaining Republicans are all freshmen. So they have not had any experience on, you know, this committee or otherwise, but they have experience to go from. First is Mike King. He's the former secretary of KDOT.
Yeah.
He served under the Brownback administration managing the Department of Transportation. So, you know, not a political newcomer by any means. Alan Rivas, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. He is a dentist from Atchison. Mm-hmm. And then Angela Steins, she's an occupational therapist from Shawnee. So the last one is Sean Wilcott. He owns a couple of breweries, one of them in Holton. So small business guy, interesting background there. As the Democrats go, the ranking member, their job is to inform their caucus to kind of lead their members from the Democratic side on any given committee. So they're called the ranking member. Mm-hmm. Is Melissa Oropeza. She's a advanced practicing nurse, an APRN from Kansas City. So again, having a good health background there. Then Representative Barbara Ballard from Lawrence. She has been on that committee for a very long time. So she, again, very deep knowledge. She's actually going to be now the ranking member on the Appropriations Committee. So the full budget committee, she's the sort of lead Democrat there.
Okay.
And then Susan Ruiz, Representative Ruiz, is from Shawnee, and she's the ranking member on the Health Committee. Mm-hmm. And she's been heavily involved in all these health issues for a long, long time. So mm-hmm. those are all three. They're veterans. They're known quantities around the health world.
So these are the people who will be looking at and helping determine the budget.
Yeah, the budget on the, you know, social service side of things.
In the House. Okay.
Yep. I probably won't go into quite as much detail on the health committee side. And we've kind of talked a little bit about that, you know, with Representative Carpenter being the chair. And his vice chair is new to this role, and that's going to be Dr. Ron Bryce, and he's from Coffeyville, Kansas.
Mm, okay.
So down in the sort of southeast portion of the state. He's new to that role, but he's been on the committee for a long time. Then you've got, again, a little carryover with a couple of the freshmen from the Social Services Budget Committee, Angela Steins and Alan Rivas. They're going to be on both.
They're on both committees.
As freshmen.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, they bring some new perspective to it. A lot of the folks that are on the health committee have been there before. So the last freshman that's on the committee is Representative-elect Suzanne Weichel from Lawrence. Suzanne's been around the State House for quite a while. She took off for more of a national job, but she had previously worked for Kansas Action for Children doing child advocacy policy work mm-hmm. for quite a while several years ago. So she knows her way around and knows the issues very, very well.
Yes. Could I just interject and say, having worked with Suzanne at Kansas Action for Children, and then Suzanne is also on the Alliance for a Healthy Kansas board, I should add, I can say that she is one of the top experts when it comes to a variety of different programs that intersect with health at the national level. She is really, really bright and has a lot of policy background.
Yeah, there wasn't much turnover on that particular committee. A lot of these folks have been on there before. As I'm kind of looking down through there, nobody else really pops out mm-hmm. as new. So that much more stable as opposed to what the Social Service Budget Committee was. It was mm-hmm. a lot more sort of new faces there.
So these are the people that'll be looking at the policy. And this, correct me if I'm wrong, is probably the most likely committee that a Medicaid expansion bill would go into.
Yeah, that would be the most logical place to stick it.
I know that we've previously on this podcast talked about the difference between exempt and non-exempt bills.
Yeah, and that comes into play, exempt bills versus not exempt bills. To answer your question, you know, in brief, the health committee is not exempt.
It is not. Okay.
But just to explain what you mean by an exempt bill or not an exempt bill, there are bills that we refer to, you know, in the State House culture as being blessed. And that means that they have spent some portion of time in one of the exempt committees. So they have to have some exempt committees that the bills are not subject to legislative deadlines so that, you know, in case of emergencies coming up or whatever, they can kind of keep the process moving on those specific issues. Mm-hmm. Federal and State Affairs Committee, taxation, appropriation, ways and means, calendar. Those are your exempt committees.
Okay.
They'll take a bill, even if it wasn't introduced there, that's not where it's going to be heard, and they'll just sort of run it through the committee. So it'll be reassigned so that it exempts that bill from the legislative deadlines. And so sometimes that can come into play.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, you know, I think they do try to reduce it, and they may really try to reduce it this time around because the legislative calendar this year appears much shorter than what has been in years past. So they may try even harder to stick to those legislative deadlines, and that'd be one way to do it.
So what does that mean for advocates that the calendar is reduced? What do you think that means, like, for our work?
Well, I can say for our work, it just means we have less time to do it. So we typically have a few different events at the State House during the legislative session. We have, for the last couple of years, participated in something called Love Thy Neighbor Day, which is really focused on increasing access to affordable health care from a faith-based perspective. So we've joined forces with some of our partners who have that faith-based perspective. We actually know that it's going to be on the 4th of February. We also know that we are going to have a rally in March, but it's so difficult to plan things because instead of having this whole period of time between the second week in January through the first week at least in May, we are looking now at a hard end to the legislative session after the second week in April. That makes a big difference for advocates. We're typically used to having a little break in April where we can do grassroots mobilization before lawmakers come back for the veto session. That's not going to be possible with this new calendar that they've put out. So, yeah, a new way of doing business, and we're going to have to adapt to it.
So less time for advocates is what that kind of means for us as of now.
Yeah, usually we had a big break, you know, and then you can kind of do full court press, you know, ahead of the veto session. But that's not the plan as of right now.
So early communication with your elected official is extra critical this year.
Extra critical. Extra critical. Well, and I'll say that for a couple reasons. Not only that, sort of the calendar reason, but, you know, you see something like the makeup of that Social Services Budget Committee where you have four freshmen on there.
Mm-hmm.
Or you look at the Senate, the overall makeup of the Senate, you know, right around a third of the Senate turned over, new senators. Many of those folks, you know, several of them came from the House, so, you know, they know where the bathrooms are.
Mm-hmm.
They know how things go, but they are brand new senators. And so when folks are new to this job, that presents us an opportunity to build a relationship and build our case for Medicaid expansion or the issues that all of our partners care about.
Mm-hmm. So we don't know the Democrats that will be on the Senate.
We don't know the Democrats yet.
But what do we know about that?
And we don't know the budget side of things yet.
Okay.
So what we do know, we have the same chair, Senator Beverly Gossage from Eudora, and we got a former House member that is, you know, turned senator, Dr. Clifford from Garden City.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd served in the House. Now he's coming over to the Senate, and he's going to be the vice chair on that committee. You've got Senator Chase Blasey on the committee, who is newly minted member of the leadership team on the House Republican, in the House Republican caucus. He's the new majority leader. Senator Renee Erickson, she was on there previously. Well, that and Senator Mike Thompson from Shawnee. Those are the ones, they've been there previously, but you had a lot of turnover on this committee too.
Mm-hmm.
Not only in that leadership role that we talked about with Senator Clifford, who did serve on the health committee on the House side, but you have four new senators on the Republican side serving on this committee, three of which are former House members. Senator-elect Owens, Senator-elect Murphy, Michael Murphy, Senator-elect T.J. Rose, and Senator-elect Adam Thomas. Of those, Senator Rose is the only one that new to the State House entirely. The other three came from the House side.
So that is the committee that would probably house a Medicaid expansion bill in the Senate side.
It would.
Okay.
It would.
I mean, I think there's always the possibility, because Medicaid expansion has to do with spending, that those bills could go through the Appropriations and Ways and Means committees. I think, but in practice, they've always been assigned to the health committees when they've had hearings. So that's kind of what we would expect. But I think that just like last year, it's going to be an uphill climb to get a hearing on those bills. We do expect that there will be bills that are introduced in the upcoming year. And I think that it's going to be on advocates to really make sure that policymakers know that it's important. We want to have a hearing in public at the State House, and we're probably going to need to make a huge push, just like last year, in order for that to happen.
So what do we think the priorities of the Kansas legislature might be? Do we have any, do you have any inkling?
So, you know, the stated priority right now, I think, is property taxes. That's going to create some interesting dynamics. So they did a very different budget process this year as opposed to the previous years. And they had the agencies submit their requests, not only to the governor as they had previously, and then the governor would make decisions and put together a budget. They had those agencies submit those requests to the legislature. And so then the legislature is kind of putting together their own budget to work from, which is not how it typically has worked in the past. They've always kind of worked from the governor's budget. So they did that this year. And so that gave us a little bit more of a peek into where folks are thinking, you know, how folks are thinking about the budget. And so, you know, there's been a lot of talk about capping some spending in some ways, and that could have a pretty significant impact on the Medicaid program and a lot of the programs that, that the listeners to this podcast are going to care about. I think that, that tells us we're going to have to go out early and often on the issues that, that we care about and be educating folks there. What's driving that this year as opposed to previous is they're starting to see, because the tax cut bill that happened last year, they're starting to see a pretty quick erosion of the ending balance. So through COVID and all that, the various programs, they built up, you know, multi-billion dollar ending balance, and now it's projected that that's going away. At the same time, a lot of campaign promises were made on reducing or eliminating property taxes, you know, so like real estate type property taxes. And so if you're to do that, it creates an even larger hole. So, you know, they're trying to kind of figure that out. Again, I think that early and often advocacy for the programs that we are seeing out there, again, when you've got the Senate that's turned over a full third, and then these committees that, that we talked about having so many new members, we need to educate folks so that they understand all these issues. Legislators are generalists. They come in with their area of expertise, like any one of us, but then legislators are expected to vote and act on a variety of programs, many of which, you know, quite frankly, if you're a new legislator, you've never even heard of. And that's not a knock on anybody. That's just...
Nobody can know everything.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we need to do our job as advocates and get out there and educate them on these issues so that they're prepared to make good decisions that, that impact their constituents. That's just the nature of a citizen legislature.
So look for a topic maybe that your legislator really cares about and tie it back to protecting healthcare access and things.
That's a good strategy. I mean, if you can do that, great. If not, you know, they legislators count on experts to come in and let them know about programs that aren't, you know, in their wheelhouse. And so if you're a constituent who is an EMS director, you know, and you serve their community, then you're the person that they're going to want to call. Or if you're, you know, a nurse at the local hospital and this is the issue that's coming up, speaking as a former legislator, they want to have those sort of local experts. And then there's the experts that come to them at the State House. They want to get that information so that they can make the best possible choice for their constituents.
And I would just say, from an advocacy perspective, I think it's really easy for us to become jaded, to think, you know what, I have a sense of this legislator. I don't think that they're going to support my thing. I don't think it's even worth talking to them. I'm just going to keep my distance. And I have learned firsthand that never benefits you. The best thing that you can do is just reach out and try to find that common ground. I think Sean is brilliant at this. He really finds ways to connect with most people. And I think that, you know, going into a relationship very earnestly, looking for ways that you can work with someone is definitely the way to go about it. We're not necessarily in a situation where we want to go and scold someone or criticize them for what they haven't done. This is the beginning of the legislative session. It's the beginning of a new biennium. It's the beginning of new work at the federal level as well. And so I think it's really best, and definitely the approach that we're going to take, is going in with the intent of finding ways that we can work together with every elected official. And if we are disappointed, then I think we'll just, you know, keep trying to figure that out on a person-by-person basis. But the only way to be successful when it comes to collaboration and finding new ways to get things done is by having that conversation, keeping lines of communication open, and maintaining a relationship that even if you don't agree on everything and everyone realizes on both sides that you don't agree, you can at least have civility in continuing to have the conversation, because that's when you find those interesting solutions.
Yeah, and it can, I still, you know, I've been doing this work for a while now and I still feel intimidated. So it's okay if you also feel intimidated talking to your legislator, but try not to be.
Well, yeah, and so that's kind of the beginning of sort of advocacy 101. I mean, mm-hmm. you just got to understand there's 165 legislators out there. They come from all different walks of life. It is wild, the differences, but it's wild, the similarities. It's just any other human out there. And my advice is always to just connect with somebody as a person first, you know, just a fellow human being that we want to, and put aside everything else. Because this is just straight out of, you know, how to win friends and influence people. You just want to connect as people. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we can kind of work on our differences or work on our similarities. The other thing that I kind of preach to advocates is that advocacy is a spectrum and it's not binary. Mm. And so you're always trying to push things in your direction. So you're trying to turn those hard no's into, you know, maybe they're not willing to sort of lay on the railroad tracks against it. Mm. And you're trying to, obviously, the people in the middle, you're trying to pull them in your direction from yes to no. But even on your own side, you're trying to turn those advocates that are supporters of whatever it is you're after into your champion, you know, your people that'll carry the banner and charge hard. We're usually put off by the folks that, you know, don't necessarily agree with us. But if we start as people and then we understand that we might not get them to switch their position entirely, but you are winning by moving them on the spectrum somewhere. Mm-hmm. And we need to reward ourselves and understand that as advocates, just so that we stay in the game, because it can be so tough on a long haul issue like Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't feel that way sometimes, but we still need to keep engaging and understand, you know, why, and start with that. Start with the why and connecting with people.
And I'm just going to acknowledge sometimes it's harder than other times, but it's still worthwhile all the time. One of the things that we haven't really talked about is a committee on the House side called the Welfare Reform Committee. And so that committee was created really to look at programs like the Medicaid program and supplemental nutrition, otherwise, well, it's SNAP now, but it used to be called the food stamp program, and other programs like that, to look at ways to make them more modern or efficient or what have you. That committee was active over the last 2 years, mm-hmm. looking at things. They didn't really get deeply into Medicaid, but that's always a possibility that there would be threats to the Medicaid program through that committee. And although I haven't heard any specific things, we know that that's always out there. Mm-hmm. So So some things that have been, you know, kind of swirling around for several years are ways to create more red tape for people who want to participate in programs like Medicaid. So work reporting requirements, different types of testing, some of those things are already baked into the Kansas program. But obviously, anything that creates barriers to participation would be threats to the program, just because a lot of people who are in the position of qualifying for programs like Medicaid are really struggling day to day just to figure out how they're going to make ends meet and keep everyone fed, and, you know, what bills are we going to pay this month or this week. And so being able to jump through some of the administrative hoops are just not, it's just not possible for them. And all too often we see people losing their access to programs because they haven't met those administrative burdens. So that's always something that we need to keep an eye out for at the state level. And I think that, you know, Sean mentioned this, there are a lot of threats at the federal level right now. Mm-hmm. We know in particular that the enhanced credits on the Affordable Care Act marketplace are set to sunset at the end of 2025 if they're not renewed. And just as a reminder, those subsidies were increased during the pandemic, and that has been continued at least one time. And we know that 93% of people who get their insurance from the ACA marketplace receive those enhanced credits. So we would see an awful lot of Kansans whose insurance costs are going up next year if that's not renewed. And it doesn't seem like that's going to be a very sure bet that it will be renewed. So at the federal level, there's a lot of things within the Medicaid program itself that are threats. And then also those ACA plans are a very real threat to the access of Kansans to affordable care.
I anticipate a whole episode on the federal stuff.
Yeah, probably more than one, I would imagine. There's a lot of content there.
It's hard to talk about that in any detail without any specific plan that's been proposed at that. But we will be here if and when that happens. All right. Well, that is what we know. Thank you, Sean. Now we know, you know, if you are somebody who heard your legislator's name mentioned, you know that they are extra important. And so we will have a lot of opportunities for everybody to advocate in the coming weeks and months. So please stick around. As a reminder, our Love Thy Neighbor is coming up February 4th. Check the website, expandcancare.com, for more information about that. We will have a rally. To be determined date exactly, but it will be in early March, so keep an eye out for that. And make sure you are on our email list so that you can get all of the breaking alerts as they come. We will send out, I think we call them action alerts. We will send out action alerts. And so you know when it is time to use your voice. Thank you so much, everybody. Hope you have a lovely first part of January, and we will talk to you again in 2 weeks.
Health in the 34th is a podcast from the Alliance for a Healthy Kansas. We hope you'll take a moment to subscribe and share our podcast with others. Episodes written and produced by Marissa Alcantar and Lacey Kennett. Episodes available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Join the movement and get involved. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. For more information on the Alliance for a Healthy Kansas, visit us at expandcancare.com.
Sean, how long did it take you to find where the bathrooms were on your first day?
No, given they dropped me off in that tunnel, it took me a long time.